It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It is the 23rd day of October, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room and be part of the Madcap Multimedia real-time extraordinary, wacky, zany extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the hours in which this program is live. If you pick yourself out a free screen name and a free password, then you will immediately be greeted by the likes of, oh my goodness, Anatole, Earther, Jug-a-Punch, Laborman, Silent R. Lamar, Steve from Georgia Stan, V.T. Blom, and of course, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who being a third state, no, spacing guild master, haha, has folded space to become Man Cave. There were some problems with the space folding unit there. In the man cave, I believe, last week, but they seem to have been corrected. Yes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We begin official anniversary week this evening because the Horn's 12th anniversary will roll around tomorrow, the 24th day of October, so it's anniversary week eve something or another here at the Horn this evening. And, not by any measurement. I mean, you know, geologic epochs and eras. 12 years isn't much. But in human terms, in terms of the amount of time one devotes out of the amount of lifetime one can reasonably expect under the best of circumstances, 12 years is still quite a bit of time. And we will have been at it for 12 years tomorrow in this format only. If you add in the bad old days of terrestrial radio and America's fifth smallest radio market, well, it's even longer than that. But 12 years as of tomorrow, and that's something. At least it feels like something from here. I don't think we're going to have cake and ice cream or anything because, you know, it's radio. But 12 years. And so I'm happy to announce that I'm happy to announce that we managed through the good offices of the Horn's subscriber crew that we actually have just a regular fundraising goal this evening. No hole, no nothing. Okay? And so thanks go out to Ralphs and Carl and Bernice and Steve and Joan and Renee and our friends at Shadow Mountain, and Michael and Sylvia, to Gail and Joyce, to Brenda and Stacy, to Samuel and Philip and Frank. And so all of that made up for what we would have otherwise been a fundraising hole of some, you know, $250 or so. But it wasn't. So that's awesome. And so we just got our regular $200 to raise this evening. Now, just a word about subscriptions, as always. If you would like to just set it and forget it, just go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on contribute, and check the box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. Put in the $10, unless you are, some sort of fabulously wealthy liberal, or hey, you know, right winger. Your money will spend too. This is a far better use of your money than spending it on poisoning the planet or killing people or things that conservatives usually like to spend their money on. Y'all just put down the number one and start writing zeros until your wrist gets all crampy. But for most folks, just put in $10 and eventually maybe we'll have 400 people at $10 a piece. And if you don't like that, there's always the Patreon campaign over at patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/BobKincaid. And that'll get you, those contributions come out on the first of the month. So, if you decide to be a Patreon subscriber right now, you won't even get billed until November the 1, okay? So that's where that is. But either way, it would be lovely to get to that point, sometime. So, think about it. Other than that, we need 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12 and a quarter, or 12.50, 32 at 6 and a quarter, or $64 at $3.13, because we're going to round up that half penny and put it in the fabulous Horn Mansion upgrade and upkeep fund. Okay, so anniversary-wise, Ralphs says, hey, Bob, if a 12-year contribution, if four people contribute $48 or any variation of that, oh, don't make me do the ciphering, Ralphs, please, oh, please. If four people contribute $48 or eight people contribute $24 or 16 people contribute $12, or any variation of, that's the variations, I'll kick in 50. Hugs, Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very kindly. Thank you so very much. And that would knock down the fundraising for the evening. And that would be freaking awesome. So that's where we stand at the beginning of the program. Of course, there's always the United States Postal Service. Boss Man Wayne still loves to get mail. The mailing address for checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid. I never see that stuff. That's what Boss Man Wayne does. And then he pays some of the bills, and I pay some of the bills, and we all pay bills. That is the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. Okie doke. That helps too. That's a huge help. Like I said, Boss Man Wayne loves to go to the mailbox and not be greeted by echoes and spiders. Or Kleagle, Cyclops, wizard types. No. Yeah. So that gets us all the way into the meat of the program. This here is Moran Monday. And wow, have we got us some Morans. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. More than you can shake a stick at. They've been piling up all weekend, I should tell you. Thank you, Laborman. Laborman pointing out in the chat room. Breaking news, Scrump is a Jagov and a mental defective. That becomes a little more apparent every blessed day. Mm-hmm, it sure does. One other thing. Just a quick question. Have you been feeling down? Do you just lack that essential lift in your shoes? Are you just not quite as perky as you think you ought to be? Are you not bright-eyed and bushy-tailed? Well, we can get you to bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, all with egalitarian eggplant from Horn Labs. Yes, egalitarian eggplant from Horn Labs, an extractive extracted only from the finest cruelty-free, vegan, gluten-free, organic, non-GMO eggplants, and compacted into a wee tiny little capsule that you can take two or three of a day, and it'll put that perk back. That spring will be back in your step. You'll have a twinkle in your smile and a glisten, or you'll feel so much better if you'll just take egalitarian eggplant from Horn Labs. Egalitarian eggplant, a proprietary blend by the hardworking bullshit scientists at Horn Labs. Egalitarian eggplant. And of course, if you order now, operators are not standing by. If you order now, you can get egalitarian eggplant and a little bundle of meaningless test strips to make sure that you've got only the finest egalitarian eggplant that will do absolutely nothing for you. Egalitarian eggplant from Horn Labs. Laborman asks, but Bob, will it lift my boner? And I can only say to you, Laborman, have you ever seen an eggplant? Okay. I mean, right. So, accept no substitutes, post no bills, use no hooks, this side up. And this is not a free call because there's no phone number and operators are not standing by. But I've never been able to really, I've never really much cared for eggplant. And to this day, the only way I can get my daily nutritional blast of eggplant goodness is with egalitarian eggplant from Horn Labs. Also guaranteed lead-free, unlike preparations as sold by Alex Jones. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And so now that we, since I've mentioned egalitarian eggplant, well, we can know that we're every bit as cool as the other for-profit radio programs that have meaningless, useless bullshit nutritional products to sell. Egalitarian eggplant, only from Horn Labs. Yes. Okie dokie. So it's more in Monday. And I should note that, you know, while some people have been grandfathered and grandmothered out of the More in Monday competition, the President of the United States never is. Don't, Earther, just don't. No algebra, Earther. Let's just get it started, shall we? Yeah. You know how this works, right? Sure.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right. The sound of the calliope pumping up means that everybody has to come a-running. Everybody, that is, except for Tim from L.A., who cannot stand the sound of the calliope. It's More in Monday on the Horn. Yes, indeed. Friends and neighbors, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, kiddies and cousins, moms and dads. Just step a few mere yards away from the Carnival Midway, where just moments ago you were throwing ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls in your desperate attempt to win an iguana that you didn't want in the first place, just come over here to the Moran Monday tent. We've got them all. We've got them absolutely all inside this thin cybernetic veil of canvas. You'll find them. Right-wingers of all variety. Big ones, little ones, Morans in between, absolutely. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, trumpansies, maggots, libertarians, Republicans, conservatives, all inside the Moran Monday tent. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Oh, my goodness gracious. There aren't many bargains like the horn out there. At merely something on the order less than 16 cents per hour of programming, you can have access to all the Morans your heart may desire or not desire by just signing up for a very simple subscription. There is no bigger bargain in broadcasting today. Of course, the typical warning always accompanies Moran Monday and those entering the thin cybernetic veil of canvas. Be extra special careful with children, small animals, even that iguana, purses, wallets, belts, toupees, European-style messenger bags, because being conservatives, the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yes, you will. Yes, you will. Yes, you will. Where to begin? Where to begin? Well, like I said, we've never grandfathered Dolt 45 from Moran Monday because he's a gift that keeps on giving. Donald J. Trump, Moran, Moran in chief, first Moran, chief magistrate Moran, Mr. President Moran, all of those various and sundry terms we have for the President of the United States, and if you put Moran in front of them, you've got Donald Trump in a nutshell. Emphasis on the word nut. The latest manifestation coming yesterday, as Maria Bartiromo, not known for her incisive interviews or her hard-hitting reporting, sat down for a tete-a-tete with the President of the United States. And if you have the stomach to listen to the whole thing and can do so without screaming, you will be rewarded with some of the most bizarre verbiage in recent memory. The spirochetes have just about run out of brain to eat, I'm afraid. And he's just a babbling series of non sequiturs, self-aggrandizements, and petty grievances. I will not, because I'm just that nice a guy, I will not play the audio. You just don't want me to. I listened to it so you wouldn't have to, because we're just that nice around here. But, oh my God, there was one question, and you know, this is one of those topics that gets certain people who live in bell jars and things like that all worked up, you know, libertarians and whatnot, the some of those folks back in the tent there. The Federal Reserve. I'm not entirely sure, except for maybe the fact that it was Fox Business Channel, so you have to ask money-ish questions. But somebody wrote a very, you know, monosyllabic question for Maria Bartiromo to ask Donald J. Trump. He owns a mansion and a yacht. Okay, no yacht. But there's a plane and a golf course. Oh, by the way, the early portions of the itinerary for Geezer disgust us as he goes on his Asia swing, taking in Japan, South Korea, China, Vietnam, and on the way home, Hawaii, where presumably he'll rent the presidential suite at some Hawaiian place where Barack Obama once stayed, and maybe, you know, make Melanoma drink a lot of cranberry juice and pee-pee all over the bed for him, because apparently, remember, that turns him on. Hey, it does. Sorry. He's just weird that way. But the first place he'll go is Japan, where in order to mollify the toddler-in-chief, recently re-elected Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has arranged for him to play golf some more again. Yeah, he'll get off a Trans-Pacific flight on Air Force One, maybe, hopefully, be rested and refreshed and ready to sit down to ride around to a rousing 18 holes of golf with Shinzo Abe and a PGA pro, Matsuyama, and this will, of course, tickle the toddler in chief to no end. Of course, there won't be much in the way of media coverage, so we won't be able to see him improving his lie periodically. I wonder if he'll play in the shadow of Mount Fujiyama. I don't know. But that was recently announced. But I have digressed. So in this fluff question posed to him by Maria Bartiromo, she asked him some question in which he could appear to wax intellectual or intelligent, and swing and a miss. She asked him about the Federal Reserve. In his answer about the Federal Reserve, Donald J. Trump, Moran in chief, declared that the Federal Reserve is, and I'm quoting here, important psychotically. Yes, psychotically important. Psychotically. The Federal Reserve is important psychotically. No, I don't think he is. Robert in Australia says, it's not coming to Australia. Good, says Robert. Well, that'll save y'all a lot of money and hassle and foo-fraw. But no, apparently it is not. And so you don't have to, you don't have to worry about all the expense and grievance that comes with it. He may not have yet healed his rift with your prime minister, with whom he had a terrible phone call some 9 months ago. But yes, the Federal Reserve, according to Donald Trump, is important psychotically. And it's all downhill. There's nothing, the whole thing is noteworthy if you do have the stomach to watch it. It's noteworthy for just how little there is. It was meant to be fluff in the first place, but even the fluff is, you know, screwed up. There was talk of tax cuts. And it's pretty clear he knows absolutely nothing about it. Because, again, the myth of this man as some sort of genius businessman has long since been exploded among everybody except the hard case dead enders, the 33 percenters, the maggots. They still that being stupid people, they still think that Trump is what a smart person sounds like. Jack in Shreveport with a note: Trump psychotic. Is this maybe an example where he refused to apologize or admit a mistake, even to correct where he misspeaks? I think I remember him doing this in a speech before. He does it all the time, but he's getting worse. He's gotten worse in the 9 months he's been president of the United States. You know, we just passed the 9 month anniversary of his inauguration. 9 months that feel like 9 years or 90. And he just continues, as people inside his own White House will attest, if you tell them that you'll grant them anonymity to do it, that he just continues to slide downhill. Well, you know, sometimes that's the price we pay for truth-telling, Brother Deacon Asa. Asa, nothing. Oh, come on, Bob, there you go again, alienating your audience by talking smack about Trump. You're cutting your listener in half. I saw what you did there, listener. Ah. Yeah, I know. But he's oblivious. He tried to talk about his tax cut, which is supposed to be the signature issue of the first year of his presidency, after screwing a few million people out of health care, turned out not to be the signature issue of his presidency. So they got around to the tax cuts, and his own Council of Economic Advisors say that if he cuts the corporate tax rate to 20%, it'll raise the average American household's wages by $4,000, which is the worst kind of blue smoke and mirrors. Talk about there's no there. And so, having had this softball served up to him that even, you know, a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old could whack into the cheap seats, once again, Donnie whiffed. And I think that there's tremendous appetite, there's tremendous spirit for it, not only by the people we're dealing with in Congress, but for the people out there that want to see something. $5,000 almost. It can be $5,000 average per individual, per group. And so I'm really looking forward to it. Let's see what happens. He's magic that way. He took $4,000 and turned it into $5,000. Because Donald Trump can buy eggs in Malta for 4 cents and sell them in Pianosa for 3 cents, and everybody makes a profit and everybody has a share. And what's good for M&M Industries is good for the country. It goes on like that. He was asked about the bipartisan health care fix that Patty Murray and Lamar Alexander came up with. Dear Jesus. So understand that he doesn't understand anything about what he just did or what he's been trying to do to people's health care, and he knows absolutely less than nothing about what's being done with this compromise hammered out by Lamar Alexander and Patty Murray. And so you get this from the transcript. Well, I've looked at it very, very strongly. And pretty much we can do almost what they're getting. I think he's a tremendous person. I don't know Senator Murray. I hear very, very good things. I know Lamar Alexander's a fine man, and he's really in there to do good for the people. we can do pretty much what we have to do without, you know, the secretary has tremendous leeway in the under the Obama plans. One of the things they did, because they were so messed up, they had no choice but to give the secretary leeway because they knew he'd have to be, he or she would have to be changing all the time. And we can pretty much do whatever we have to do just the way it is. So this was going to be temporary prior to repeal and replace. We're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. All of that palaver to get down to we're going to repeal and replace Obamacare, because that's all he knows. And he doesn't even know what that means. He just knows that the word Obama is in there and, you know, like some sort of special needs Frankenstein monster. He just got developmentally delayed Frankenstein's monster. Obamacare, bad. Fire, bad. That's all he's got. Hey, we're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. You make that little cat's ass mouth when you make it. And so thank God there's not video of this program, because I look even more stupid than I ordinarily look right now. Repeal, which is what we're going to do, repeal and replace Obamacare. Definitely repeal and replace. And it goes on and on and on like that. The exchange between Bartiromo and Trump, where, as Arthur points out, every family will get $5,000 more a month. It won't be enough to buy a mansion for the average guy, but it's going to be tremendous. Believe me. You write that very well, Arthur. Yes, indeed. The exchange over whether the tax cut is a tax cut for the rich. I mean, there one night, not so long ago, but long ago enough, I certainly don't remember the date, I read to you from William Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury, the portion that is narrated from Benji, the idiot's point of view. And Trump sounds a little more like Benji every day. I mean, God damn. Apparently the gene pool in that island in Scotland where his mother came from was so shallow a piss ant could do push-ups and not get his chin wet. So she's going to try to help Trump paint this as not being a tax cut for the rich, which, if there's ever actually a formal plan, it will be, because that's all Republicans know how to do. If the top earners pay 80% of the taxes, I mean, this is like a seventh grade math test, okay? If the top earners pay 80% of the taxes, why are you so afraid to cut taxes on the top earners? I think this, look, you know, I'm very happy with the way I've done my part, this in my civilian life, all right? Well, of course, this is not about other people. Well, it's about me representing rich people. Okay. Being representative of rich people. Very interesting to me. Bob Kraft was down. He's very nice. He owns the Patriots. He gave me a Super Bowl ring a month ago, and he... Well, Putin took his. Damn it, Maria. Don't mention the... Day, Inchin May, Uten Pay, and the Ing Ray Ing Fay. He came and he gave me a Super Bowl ring a month ago, which was very nice. That's right. But he left this beautiful ring, and I immediately give it to the White House, and they put it someplace. And that's the way it is. Remember, the topic was tax cuts for the rich. Maria Bartiromo, who, to the extent that she had a career before, or any credibility at all before, now sees it all just sort of receding into the distance, credibility. It's just, that's great. And he just goes on. She's not even really there. He said to me, he's a good man. He said to me, you have to do us all a favor. Give the tax decrease to the middle class. We don't need it. We don't need it. We don't want it. Give it to the middle class. And I've had many people, very wealthy people, tell me the very same thing. I've had very few say, I want more. I want more. So that's a big factor. But we have so many things that are going to be so great. Bringing the corporate tax down maybe is the most important. And we have a lot of most important. But bringing it down from 35 down to 20%, that's a massive. That's the biggest that we've ever done. He can't even compose a thought. Not one single cogent, coherent thought. And if his cabinet was anything but a bunch of sycophants, we'd have been having the 25th Amendment debate, and it already would have been in Congress months ago. But instead, they're going to make us wait until he gets so bad that he walks out to the presidential podium, drops trowel, and leaves a big orange load on the carpet, and then paints the walls and himself with it. Because he's not far from that. Dotard doesn't get the usage in our modern language, English language, that it should, but God damn, he is right on top of it, and whatever functionary for Kim Jong bad haircut found that word in the lone North Korean to English thesaurus there in Pyongyang is to be commended. Because Donald Trump, it is fairly obvious, has entered his dotage. He never had a lot to work with in the first place, and now he has nothing more than a meaningless string of pronouns and self-aggrandizements and no concepts whatsoever of anything that he's doing. Another few months and they'll be leading him by the hand. And if that sounds mean-spirited, I'm actually not trying to be. It's pathetic to watch someone descend into that intellectual hellscape. And if you are inclined to have any sympathy for, you know, his family, which I don't much, except for maybe the grandchildren, because they're not quite old enough to be to turn into, they haven't reached that chrysalis phase where they emerge from the chrysalis full-blown shit heels, shit birds, and shit weasels. You know, in other words, members of the Trump family. But Jesus. No, it is not, Jim, but thank you for the kind words. Hell, Bob, your imitation is better than Alec Baldwin's on SNL. Jim prefaced that by saying, Trump, piss in every pot and two bidets in every garage. Well, they're just... Well, you're going to give you $4,000, $5,000. Yes. And we'll probably just go and knock off a Coinstar to do it. You know, because he's President Bubbles from Trailer Park Boys. But he goes wandering around in the wilds of his own desolate... It's not even weird like a Salvador Dali painting. It's just this strange little world made up of jiggling cubes of multicolored jello with, you know, jello dinosaurs in the distance and jello palm trees and jello putting greens and not much there. So Maria Bartiromo at this point in time is just sort of picking daisies in left field while Trump, you know, wanders around. And so that's a big factor, but we have so many things that are going to be so great, so great. Bringing the corporate tax down maybe is the most important. We have a lot of most important, but bringing it down from 35 to 20%, that's a massive, that's the biggest thing we've ever done. It's a big deal in the corporate rate for sure, she says, you know, trying to let somebody know she's still in the room. That's a big deal for companies. That's a big deal for investment. Big deal. I think one of the other ones is expensing. You know, when you write something off in 1 year as opposed to, you know, over many years, I think that's going to be tremendous. Oh, fuck. Because, see, the interview sort of paints him as benignly not here. But he's here enough to be dangerous. You know that filthy little habit that Agnes and I have every morning, Joe and Mika? Bless her heart, Mika. A couple of weeks ago, I saw her use the I saw her use the 25th Amendment Now hashtag. She's only a few months behind the rest of us, so I'm not going to give her a bunch of grief. But there was a moment this morning where once again, it's like we're on some sort of time delay, and Mika is repeating talking points from this program. See if you can spot it, okay? Oh, come on. Really? We're going to do this? Oh, this makes me crazy. Here we go. I think. I hope.
Retreating militarily, actually, sending more troops and more operations out. And we're not talking about it because he's sending out stupid tweets that, you know, would punish our children for sending out.
You want to talk about an important public policy issue, the one Richard raised, the fact that there's ignorance on the part of leading members of Congress about where Americans are stationed around the world, what the missions are. The New York Times story, the Niger mission, whatever it was, whatever the facts are. This is essential that members of Congress avoid the distractions of both parties and try to get their arms around this. President Trump talked about coming home America, but he also talked about being tough. And he has around him an unprecedented number of military people. And that is a recipe for, if there's a failure of congressional oversight, of the executive branch doing whatever it's right. In the most important and profound responsibility it's got to defend America.
With a Republican House, certainly, that will not cross this president, that fear this president, that have basically given up their constitutional mandate to be a check on this president. And Harold, the biggest question of all
Before we get to Harold, I thought that was an interesting little remark there, noting that Congress has abdicated its responsibilities to be a check on the president. Well, yeah, and Joe, can you say it, buddy? Can you say the Republican Congress? Can you say servile? That's a big word. I know you can do it. There you go. Nice try. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's just this Congress. Because there's a whole lot of people that would like to serve as a check on Donald J. Trump. Unfortunately, they're largely muzzled by the majority in both houses, which is comprised of, come on, oh, Joe, try, Joe.
policy, North Korea.
Nope.
We should be talking about North
Korea. Absent
this
weekend.
We should be talking about North Korea every day. There is a coming war, most likely. Richard Haass, I think you'd agree. It is more likely than not that there is a conflict, possibly a full-blown war, with an emerging nuclear power.
The magnitude of the distraction can't be overstated. Last weekend, Tillerson was on just about every Sunday show defending the fact that he had not been castrated and making clear that we would continue negotiating right up until the first bomb drop, which was an amazing thing. One point on Sanders, because I want to hear Richard. President Trump, then candidate Trump, if you recall, he trashed generals throughout the campaign. Mm-hmm. He questioned them over and over again. And matter of fact, said at several instances that he was smarter than all the generals.
He knew more about it than them. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I just think she needs to go back and understand that. And I'm glad Chip Reed questioned with.
Yeah, this is all about, you know, the sliming of the sliming of the widow of Sergeant LaDavid Johnson. The sliming of Frederica Wilson that John Kelly did, and maybe we'll talk about John Kelly a little bit more in a little bit more. But there is a, you know, there's a point. Like I said, this is kind of about Mika. Seeing the lights go on. Strangely enough, Trump has a level of hatred for her that he doesn't have for Joe. It's that woman thing. I don't know if his mommy potty trained him at Claymore Point or what, but he's got a bias against women calling him out or being smarter than him that just drives him around the bend. And so, you know, the fact that, well, let's see if we can get this to go now. Pick it up where we left a little further down the road.
Something like that.
You know, it would be horrific, not unimaginable, and I could see it either happening out of design, which is what was hinted at the other day, or out of accident. We've got B-1 bombers flying close to North Korea. We've got ships in the area. North Korea continues to shoot missiles.
And by the way, one other little thing that was sort of pushed out into the national consciousness over the weekend is that down at Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisianistan, where we keep a bunch of B-52s, it is being considered. There are a couple of generals now who are trying to decide whether or not to start, you know, nuclear-armed B-52 bomber patrols. Really. And that's kind of unnerving. You know, B-52 bomber patrols with nuclear weapons, sort of like the one that Major Kong was flying in Dr. Strangelove, the ones that flew out of Burpleson Air Force Base. That. Because we haven't been doing that for a while. Now we're thinking about doing it again. Because we're thinking about using, you know, thermonuclear weapons. The one story I read said that the generals and the Pentagon has been thinking about or trying to get out of Cold War ways of thinking about using nuclear weapons, new and innovative ways in the modern era of using nuclear weapons in war.
Really? Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, that. Just to, yeah.
Any one of those scenarios could lead to action and reaction, and no one here could sit around this table and say that Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un, that given everything they've said, that they could somehow manage this. You know, you wrote the other day about JFK and the Cuban Missile Crisis. This is about as far from that kind of management of a delicate situation as you could imagine.
Sometimes you have to step back when you look at these issues, and it gets too cluttered, and you just have to look at the players, and you have to figure out what they're going to do. I believe if you step back and take a look from a distance at Donald Trump, this is a guy who has already told himself and every general around him, I will not be the person that allows North Korea to develop technology to send a nuclear weapon to the West Coast.
You know, that's bullshit. Because Donald Trump does not have the mental capacity to say, to form that complex an idea that he will not be the president who allowed North Korea to develop the technology to send a nuclear missile to the West Coast or the rest of America. He can't form that thought. Okay? You've got a better chance of having one of those lovely gorillas at the Yerkes Primate Center come up with that idea and spell it out in American Sign Language for the deaf than you do of Donald fucking Trump coming up with that with something that no and bless her heart, I don't think we've ever given a cowbell to Mika Brzezinski, but I think we're about to.
And I think, unlike other presidents, he is not limited by the fears that limited JFK or even Ronald Reagan.
Hold the damn phone. That makes JFK, well, I'm not going to speak about Ronald Reagan, but that makes JFK sound like some sort of chicken shit. That nuclear warfare scared JFK. There is something wrong with you if nuclear warfare does not terrify you. Okay? And what? He's such a... He makes it sound like Donald Trump is some sort of character from some sort of Rooster Cogburn out there. I'll fill your nuclear hands, you son of a bitch. No, goddammit, no. You know, We're 14 years on from the beginning of the Iraq War. 16 years on from the beginnings of the bombings that led to our in Afghanistan that led to our full-on engagement there. And we used to say that George W. Bush thought himself a cowboy. Huh? No. These are not cowboy actions. If we've got to have some sort of Old West analogy, I don't know, rodeo clown? No, not even that. Jack with a note says, recall that Barksdale was involved in some kind of mishap with nukes. I think it had to do with not accounting properly for transporting a fake nuclear weapon, but not sure. I remember that, yes. And Barksdale is also where George W. Bush first fled to when he found out about the attacks of September 11th, 2001. Clarence says, he's not a moron, Bob. Trump's an idiot. This guy has to go. See, that's the problem, though, Clarence. He doesn't have to go. He only has to go if someone will tell him he has to go. And so far, we don't have anybody willing to do that. At least not who has anything approaching or resembling power. Note coming from Ron and Raleigh, corporate taxes. The statutory corporate rate is 35%, but the average actual rate paid is about 12.5%. Does the cut to 20% mean that corporations will pay even less? Yes. Consider the fact that ExxonMobil has gotten a refund the last few years. He's also asking for another repatriation at 10%. How stupid are we? Well, it depends on how you define stupid and we. You know, Ron, I know, the Horn Family Community Congregation knows what a drop-dead piece of insanity this is. But convincing. That's one of the problems. You know, we talked so long about normalization. Every time the for-profit media reports a Trump story as anything but a manifestation of mean-spirited ignorance and stupidity, they normalize him a little bit more. I mean, just take for a minute that business about the corporate tax rate's going to put $4,000 in people's pockets. It isn't. You can't even sit down. Only a right-wing economist with a brain just buzzing with bad acid could make that connection. There's nobody out here working at Wally World who's going to be $4,000 a year richer because I don't know, Amalgamated Widget got a corporate tax cut from 35% to 20%, which meant that their effective tax rate, again, you know, they get a refund. Jesus Christ. It's just, it's trickle-down economics all over again. It's like a cult, not a religion, but a cult that the GOP can't get away from because they've repeated the mantra taxes bad so many times that it's become part of the fabric of their existence. And so we find ourselves here. But let's get back to Mika here in a minute. They're going to let her talk in a second, I'm pretty sure.
And by the way, I when I say fears, don't flinch. I mean, you have reason to be scared of a war that could wipe out 500,000 people.
No, I just think he wants to use nukes. That's what I think he feels.
Well,
totally disagree. I think that he's
You totally disagree with what?
You've heard him over the past year.
Right,
he's excited about the concept.
The U.S. floor plans don't require the use of nukes.
You didn't.
I know.
You didn't hear me, Mika.
I heard you.
No, you didn't. No, I said he is not chained by the same fears that chained.
Yeah, you didn't hear her, Joe. You didn't listen. You're trying to sound all smart and stuff when the reality is much simpler. And maybe for those of us who grew up during some portion or all of the Cold War, maybe it's hard for us to get our heads around that. But the thing is, Mika is saying something that I said a long time ago. Him want see big bomb go boom. He thinks it would be cool. He likes spectacle. You remember the story? It wasn't made up. He asked the question, what's the point of having nuclear weapons if we can't use them? I think that's true. I think that's true, Clarity. Clarity says there's no analog, Bob. Trump has no analog. This is why not even you can find some archetypal analog for this joker with bad jokes. But no, it's hard to get our minds to the place where we can imagine that there is a person with his finger on the goddamn button who just wants to see... I mean, it's the, okay, here, the search for an analog. Trump is that guy in Folsom Prison Blues.
Well, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die.
He wants to light up North Korea or somewhere else. It really doesn't matter. We've got him. He wants to use him. It'll make his tiny todger dance like a snake in a microwave. It's who he is and where he is.
What's the point of having nukes if we can't use them? Notes Steve from Georgistan. That should make anyone with a degree of sense shiver to their core.
Yeah, Clarity. He wants to nuke Iran. He wants to nuke North Korea. Jesus Christ, if we're not careful, he'll want to nuke Niger.
Or Nigeria. If I were Nigeria right now, I would be very nervous.
Because it can be confused with it in a heartbeat.
The generals, as Clarity notes, tried to mollify him. They dropped a Moab. A mother of all bombs.
Poor Nigeria is two vowels away from being accidentally attacked.
Silent R. Lamar says, come on, Bob, Trump's tired of the gas bubble in the tub.
Ah, Gogglesby, sounds like a bubble in a bathtub.
There's, you gotta dig deep to find analogies for this guy. W.C. Fields, the bank dick, beefsteak mines. God damn.
Steve down on the Gulf Coast says, subject line, government by idiot. He owns a lot of real estate. He's a criminal. He's the president. Pretty good odds for beating just about any rap, if you ask me. As for tax reform, nothing will be revealed until the midnight hour of whenever it's passed. Practically no one who votes for it will bother to read it. And even more will excuse themselves for having been a part of it. The end. Regards, Steve on the Gulf Coast. And here's the thing. Trump wants to see Big Bomb go boom. And he wants to light the fuse. You know, if some nation would just happen to nuke a city on the West Coast, he hates all of them. He'd be fine with that because then he could shoot a lot of nukes. It would tickle him pink. Meanwhile, one of the people off to the side of Mika, you may have heard there, said, well, the use of nuclear weapons isn't in the war plan. And she rightly said, I know. It's not what it's about. It's about his unilateral exercise of power that only he has. It's all it's ever been about. His desire to use a nuclear device comes from the same place that led him to walk into the dressing room full of scantily clad pageant contestants because he could, because no one could stop him. It's the same thing. If you could give him a bolus dose of Viagra and send him naked into a room full of desirable women, it's disgusting to even contemplate, but just, you know, let him totter rampant, he would be as happy as he would be nuking some country full of innocent people. And you know what? Maybe we lose sight of this. There are innocent people in North Korea. A lot more innocent people in North Korea than anyone who actually wants to do harm to us here. North Korea is still filled with people who have family in South Korea. And you know what? Trump would like to murder them. He would. It would be inconsequential to him. He wouldn't be thinking about them. He just wants He wants the raw, naked exercise of unilateral power. Like back when he was young, and his daddy would just slap the shit out of him. And there was nothing little Donnie could do about it. Sparky points out he needs to go see Santa Rosa if he wants to see a place nuked by a fire. Same thing happens in a nuke bomb blast, the firestorm. Yeah, but see, that doesn't give him an excuse to nuke somebody. It's not that he wants to see what it does. He wants to see the bomb go boom, and he wants to be able to be the person who makes it go boom, and no one can stop him. They all have to salute, yes, sir, and set fire to the earth on his word. He wants to be like that verse from the Bhagavad Gita that was cited by Robert Oppenheimer on the first hydrogen bomb test, wasn't it? Lo, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds. And I really want to make sure that we take this all the way in and fully comprehend it, because only by doing that can we understand what we're dealing with. Ronald Reagan used to say, "Well, we don't negotiate with terrorists," and then, of course, he did. But it's sort of the same thing. You've got someone who wants to do tremendous harm, tremendous damage, and he doesn't really. He doesn't really want to. I mean, there's no purpose beyond the satisfaction of his own bizarre ego. Yeah, Sparky points out the A-bomb test at Trinity. It doesn't count, though. He didn't do it.
That's what I mean when I say we're having a hard time getting our heads around what's going on with him. This is a man who wants to go down in history no matter what he has to do to go down in history. He'll go down as a good guy or a bad guy. And even if he lets fly on North Korea, he will scream that he is in the right for doing it the whole time. Donald Trump isn't just a threat to the ongoing constitutional attempt at something vaguely resembling democracy that is the United States. Donald Trump is a threat to every living thing on planet Earth. This is the ultimate test of what happens when you provide a psychopath or a sociopath with access to almost unlimited power. I remember when people were talking about, oh, this person, that person, you know, everybody was a psychopath. Everybody was a sociopath. And you know what? There's research out there that shows that there's a higher degree of sociopathic tendencies among the corporate leadership class, and there's no getting around it. But, you know, a sociopath at the head of United Gizmo can only do so much harm. There are very few people on Earth who have the inherent power to destroy life on the planet. Or at least sentient life on the planet. One of those very few people is Donald Trump. And as Mika noted, he just wants to see what happens when he uses one of these things. And that is, that's the very definition of existential terror. But what you have to understand is that knowing that he wants to do that, every single member of this government who does not do everything in their power to get his hands away, his tiny little fingers away from the button, is complicit in whatever it is he eventually does. We've had nuclear close calls in the past. They've been talked about on this program. But we have never had this situation. There was never a Soviet premier that was just babbling batshit nuts and an idiot into the bargain. The Pakistanis have nuclear weapons. They're not this nuts. The Indians have them. Them neither. They recognize the vast amount of power that they hold. The Indians and the Pakistanis hate each other's goddamn guts, and they have somehow managed not to nuke each other because they know that it's game over the minute that they do. They have nukes to keep other people with nukes from nuking them. The only other country on Earth I have ever worried about actually being a first strike user of nuclear weapons is Israel. Because they, because Israel acts all precious about how, oh, well, you know, we won't acknowledge that we have them, but we have them. And you never quite know when Bibi's just going to wake up in the wrong frame of mind and a few million, you know, Arabs are going to die. And I never thought we had a president. You know, once we saw the immense destructive power of these things, we generally have not had any presidents who were sort of casual about the use of them. No matter how badly you hated Reagan, no matter how stupid he was when he said, "Well, I have just declared the Soviet Union to be illegal. The missiles begin flying in 5 minutes." He was just joshing around behind the microphone before his weekly radio address. Just happened to have the mic open and the whole world heard it. Oopsie. But he was only kidding. Donald Trump isn't kidding. And therein... Therein lies the rub. So, I don't think, I don't think it's unreasonable to worry about this. I think it's extremely reasonable. And the people that I am most worried about are the people who continually enable him and do not take the necessary constitutional steps to remove him from office. I started off the filibobster talking about the Bartiromo interview, if you can call it that. With someone with functioning brain cells, it would have just been batting practice and, you know, lobbing big fat ones over the plate just to see how far they could... hey, can you go upper deck with that one there, bub? Right. But after all the economic nonsense, then there was, you know, there was some existential terror in the interview. Do you think they're going to get Europeans to support you in terms of sanctions, in terms of not selling technology to Iran? Because remember, the Iran deal was the dirtiest, worst, most terrible, gosh-awful deal in the world, even though it turned out to be a pretty decent deal, but it's terrible because Obama... I am not doing anything here but reading the transcript. I mean, apart from, like, the silly voice. Can you get the Europeans to go along with you on not selling technology to Iran? Because if the U.S. gets out of the Iranian deal, the reason it was set up as a multilateral deal was so that nobody, no Republican, could screw it up. Because it wasn't just Trump. It's remember, the problem is a Republican problem, not just a Trump problem. So we got lots of nations involved so that even if a Republican came along and tried to screw the pooch, it would be difficult to do. His response to that question?
Honestly, I told him, they're friends of mine. They really are. I get along with all of them. Whether it's Emmanuel or whether it's Angela, I get along. I really like those people. I told him, just keep making money. Don't worry about it. We don't need you on this. You just keep making money. When Iran buys things from Germany and from France and from the various by billions of dollars, even us, they were going to buy Boeings. I don't know what's going to happen with the deal. We'll see what happens with the deal. But when they buy those things, it's a little harder for those countries to do something. Would they do it if I really was insistent? I believe they would. I told them just keep making money. Don't worry. We don't need you on this one.
If you've got the stomach for it, go and watch it. I mean, it's at least instructive in a sort of mad way. Holy hell. Sparky pointing out, a ballistic missile submarine can carry up to 24 nuclear missiles, which can be configured with up to 8 nuclear warheads each. All you need for North Korea, you just need one sub. But it only takes one bomb to set off the nuclear conflagration, the nuclear holocaust of response and counter-response that kills everything on the planet. And then there's the question of something we haven't much talked about for a while, nuclear winter. Just one bomb would be enough to get the ball rolling. We don't know exactly what the nature of the agreements China has with North Korea are, but they have said that if the United States acts offensively and starts a war, remember the Bush Doctrine, preemptive, that they will defend North Korea. They lob one at us. We lob one back. Russia says, hey, now that we're doing this, we're going to get in on it too. They lob one or two or 50. Game over. Sobering, isn't it? And all because of a moran. And all because we failed our quadrennial one-question national IQ test. I get all nostalgic sometimes. I remember back before November the 8th, 2016, when there were progressive people running around screeching about how Hillary will start World War III. Well, here we are, sunshine, and it ain't Hillary. How's that feel? Yeah, I know. 22 minutes past the hour, there is a challenge on the table. Ralph's will kick in $50 if some manifestation of multiples of 48 will jump in to mark our 12-year anniversary. If four people contribute $48 or any variation of that, I'll contribute 50. That's the offer from Ralph's. Thus far, Bupkis at 23 minutes past the hour. And we're also on the downhill slope away from, October. We've got 5 days this week and then Monday to finish even. And that will, of course, nudge the Norsky, lick the Lithuanian, and cash the check. Yes, exactly. So that's rather a big deal. And thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly to Jack. Jack just took up one of those slots. So there are three. We need three more people at $48 to finish fundraising with Ralph's challenge. Thank you, Jack. Thank you very kindly. That helps a lot. Jack also pointed out, I was trying to find a clip of Ali Velshi interviewing Art Laffer today. Couldn't find one, but I noticed on Twitter Laffer has been all over the place in the past couple of months, lying his ass, spelled with dollar signs, of course, off. Well, he's the original brewer of the poison that ate up Republicans' brains. A silly, discredited, disproved notion that if you just cut taxes enough, economic productivity will go up so much that you won't even need taxes. This is called stupidity. And it's been shown to be wrong again and again and again and again and again. But like a dog returning to its vomit, the Republicans keep coming back to it. Because, well, you know, they know that hollering tax cuts gets them votes with a certain portion of not particularly intellectually driven voters.
Me and Marveline, we're going to be rich next year after them Trump tax cuts come through. We're thinking of becoming a hedge fund. We ain't decided yet whether we're going to use boxwoods or hollies for our hedge, but we've got a fund for them.
Ron in Raleigh says, could you please tell me, after all the shit we've done to Iran, how the hell did we get to be the aggrieved party? Overthrow their government, install a dictatorship for 30 years, blow a civilian airliner out of the sky, killing over 270 Iranians, yet they're the bad guys. Well, see, they say bad things about our little friend Israel. They talk about things like Palestinians being real live human beings. And this, of course, gives Israel a big sad. And that makes us mad at Iran. Because we don't like for anybody to make the tiny little hyper-warlike state of Israel sad. And two plus, you know, we've also convinced ourselves that some of the original white people on Earth aren't that white anymore. It's kind of like that clip we had last week where suddenly people of Spanish descent weren't white anymore. They done got their white took away from them. See how it works? Yeah. It's a little bothersome. A little worrisome. Definitely worrisome. So we are 2¾ of the way now away from finishing fundraising for this last day of our 11th year. Last day of our 12th. Oh, math. Anyway, before we turn 12, we are, with the challenge on the table, we've got 2¾ $48 contributions to go, and then Ralph's will tie it all up with a nice little bow at $50. Okay? Scott and Punky with a note. Laffer curve wrong. Hint, state of Kansas under Sam Brownback. Well, but see, they just didn't do it right, Scott. I mean, I remember when we gave all kinds of trickle down economics, Laffer curve bullshit, its head during the reign of error with Dim Leader. And do you remember what they were saying by the end of the eighth year of Dim Leader? Well, Bush wasn't a real conservative, and that's why it didn't work. He wasn't enough of a true believer. Mm-hmm. It's never worked. It's never going to work. Okay, it's the alchemical search for the universal solvent and the means of transmuting lead into gold, it is never going to work. You might find out some other interesting things along the way, but you're never going to see that moment when Art Laffer's curve is anything but a laugh. You know, his mother really should have encouraged him to go into comedy. Because going into economics, with a name like Laffer, that was a bad sign. Arthur pointing out, and by the way, yes, Sam Brownback's Kansas. And contrast case study, Jerry Brown's California. Well, yes, that is, as a matter of fact, Arthur. Well observed, well observed. All right, well, we're down to 1¾. 1¾. Thank you, Frank. Thank you kindly. 1¾ of the challenge structure set up by Ralphs to go, and then Ralphs finishes it all off. So that's actually what we're talking about there is 48, 54... $84. Frank, 82 bucks. $82. Thanks to Michael and Madison. Thank you very kindly. And thanks to Frank. And I think we can get there because we're at the halfway point of the program. I've filibobstered my little my fool little head off, and I got more to take care of. But I'm going to take a break. And if you want to engage in conversation, we can do that, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, or from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, and we will get right at it after I go away and come back. Y'all aren't going anywhere. I am. Just very briefly. All right. This is listener-supported Conversation Radio, delivering progressive conversation for almost 12 years, from October the 24th, 2005, to the present. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You lift the fuse, I
What you want out of a coming nuclear holocaust? Something you can dance to. Absolutely. The Gap Band, You Dropped a Bomb on Me. And, yes. So, that'll be... You know, I heard a song. Ferg and I were heading to work. That's right. Steve from Georgia Stan says, man, we are just a nugget of joy tonight, eh? Absolutely. I'm Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine. Or maybe gamma rays. You won't... Pretty bright one of those. And that's what, that, you know, that's what Trump wants to see. He wants to see the really bright, flashy thingy. My God. But it's true. He wants it. He yearns for it. He aches for it. Let's see. Hung Like Jesus wants the phone number. 304-574-8178. And then Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn. Bob Kincaid Horn. I just did. Here, let me make it a little. There we go. Well, let's go over and check in with Scott and Punky. What's up?
Hey, Bob.
What's happening?
It's all realer than real here in beautiful downtown Oz. I am telling you, man, let me look real quick before I shoot my mouth off, just to be sure I'm telling you right. Wait a minute. Let's see. Oh, and you were talking the other day that you think you pulled something or messed something up from coughing.
Yeah, it's still pulled and messed up. I feel like I've got a I feel like I've got a freaking knife in my right elbow.
Ooh. Well, as Groucho Marx once observed, it's not the cough that carries you off. It's the coffin they carry you off.
You often, yes.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of surprised that that wasn't Ogden Nash.
Well, he was probably quoting Nash. But
because that has a sort of Ogden Nash quality to it.
But, well, I'm sorry that you have coughed too much. And believe me, I've been down.
Well, I'm sorry I don't have a big old sticky bag of White Widow handy. Apparently that shit works.
Well, there's a lot to be said for medicinal cannabis.
You know one of the things we can't say about it here in West Virginia?
We
have it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I forget who it was. It might have been, I don't know who it was, but one of the callers on Friday was talking about the problem of paranoia.
When the paranoids hit.
Yeah. There was a study, I believe, in Argentina about 14 years ago. It was a reputable study by one of the institutes of higher learning down there. And they discovered that some strains of cannabis will increase the production of a substance that the body creates called oxytocin.
Yes.
And it's sometimes referred to as the love hormone or the trust hormone. And that is when there's more of it in your system, you have more feelings of calm, tranquility, love, affection.
Yeah, I think you get some of the same effect with ecstasy, don't you?
Well, I don't know. I've never used it, and I don't know that much about it. But anyway, some of the strains apparently will increase the body's own production of oxytocin. So anybody who has a dispensary should ask whoever's, the bud tender behind the counter.
You're just rubbing it in right now, aren't you?
Well, I don't know what to tell you, Bob.
I'm playing, of course, but no, I sat down. Get this, and I don't necessarily want to go back into last Friday's discussion, because I already got email talking about what a pot fest that was.
It was great. It was great.
If I could
find the box that mine is packed in from moving back in July, I would have joined in the festivities, but I have no idea. And it's what I was going to tell you. It's 97 fucking degrees on the 23rd of October out here.
Well, so that's why you sound like you're in a hangar. I hear a fan in the background.
Well, if I didn't have it on, I would be a mass of skin and fat cells and ick.
You're verging on the name of one of the next Horn products. In fact, in honor of our Horn anniversary here, let's go ahead and offer up a second product. We've never done that before. A second Horn Labs product for this evening. That's right. In honor of the 12th anniversary of the Horn, and to relieve the problems of Scott and Punky in San Diego. New from Horn Labs, desiccated dill. That's right, desiccated dill is pre-desiccated, so it will actually reverse any desiccation taking place in your person. Desiccated dill only from Horn Labs. If you act now and send $61, we'll send you a bottle of desiccated dill and whatever it was the adjective I used in front of the word eggplant earlier. Desiccated dill. From Horn Labs. Yeah, I did take Friday off, Steve. We were talking. Okay, it was Thursday. It was Thorn in the Side Porch Thursday that we turned into a giant doobie fest.
Well, and it was great. And these days run together. That's one of the joys of living out in California. Life is so wonderful under Jerry Brown that you hardly need a calendar or a watch. The days kind of meld into one another. And it's just one big, fat, happy love fest.
I thought that was probably a result of the medical marijuana dispensaries. What I was going to say, though, is
I took the state of West Virginia and our head of public health, Rahul Gupta, ordered a Survey Monkey. So the state of West Virginia put out a Survey Monkey on how do you plan to use medical marijuana in West Virginia? Well, I answered it. And they said, will you need creams? Do you prefer pills or creams or oils or tinctures? You know what wasn't on the list? Do you prefer to be able to go to the dispensary and buy some nice, clean, well-produced bud?
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
So my only hope with the problems I have and other folks, and first they need to make you want to, because you've got to check off this, but, you know, do you have cancer? We'll let you have medical marijuana if you've got cancer. No? Okay, do you have Jergens myasthenia, the mysterious disease that makes your nose mysteriously slide right off? No? I think I could qualify. But then the problem becomes one of, okay, maybe we could do something about the various aches and pains from my rotten ass, the cervical spine and things like that. Well, then I'm a blithering idiot when I come on air. Save the goddamn emails where you save the ones about Bob, you're a blithering idiot anyway. No, I mean, like, just come on out and be like, dude, let's talk. Yeah, no, I don't see that taking us into the horn's future. So, I mean, it doesn't get easy. It does, no, there nothing. There's never a complete solution to a problem, Scott.
I know. Well, I feel for you because we take it for granted out here. You know, it's the joys of living in a reliably blue state.
No, the word you're looking for is civilization.
Well, yeah, well, there's that. Yeah, there's that. And this isn't to say that we don't have problems here, but it even with the medical marijuana notwithstanding, life is way more tolerable in a place where you feel your elected officials, even some of the Republicans, where you have a very strong realistic sense that they give a shit about you and will do everything that they possibly can to help you as opposed to hinder you. It's the most amazing thing. And I don't mean to be a fucking travel brochure for the Golden State.
No, but the fact of the matter is you've lived in places like Virginia, and you've lived in places like Kansas City. And you've slowly made your way in Oklahoma, and you've slowly made your way across the continent, and now you're in civilization.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And it and the thing is, I had a chance to come out here the better part of 20 years ago, even longer ago than that, closer to 25, and I didn't do it. And I wish I had. I'm not a big fan of regrets. But I wish I had to come out here when I first had the opportunity to, because it would have saved a whole lot of headaches and heartaches.
I can understand it. I mean, look, Trey Crowder, the liberal hillbilly, you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah,
funny
yeah.
as hell. He gave up. He gave up. Said screw it. You know, I love my East Tennessee mountains, but I'm gone, baby. And now, you know. There are palm trees in his backyard or something.
Yeah.
I understand.
And for people like Willie Nelson and who's the guy, the kid that was on Cheers? Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson, sure.
California's not even enough for them. They have compounds out in Hawaii. So go figure, you know. It's incredible. But that's not why I called.
No? Really?
No. Or to complain about the weather or anything. You were saying earlier, someone was trying to make it sound as if JFK was a scaredy cat.
Yeah, that was when Scarborough.
When faced with the prospect of nuclear annihilation. And I guess that was in terms of the Cuban Missile Crisis in 62, which I remember. And all you were talking about people who have lived through the Cold War. The Cold War is only older than me by a factor of, what, 6, 7 years? When did Churchill do the Iron Curtain speech?
1948.
Okay, so I was born in 54. So, yeah, so we're talking 6 years. I mean, that was sort of the starting gun for the Cold War, at least raising people's awareness of what was going on, or as I like to call it, America's latest fucking boogeyman, okay? And we rode that one hard and fast as long as we could ride it until that horse wouldn't go no more. So we had to have a new boogeyman, which turns out to be the Cosmic International War on Terror, which, you know, how you declare war on a technique is beyond me, and intangible even. But if there's a way to do it, if there is a way to piss money away, believe me, boys and girls, we will find it. Can I have an amen?
Well, amen, yeah.
But, no, JFK was not a scaredy cat. JFK was a realist. He knew that to go up all suffused in an incandescent glow was not a way into a more vibrant future, okay? And he engaged, and he had Bobby's help and some other people's help in back channel chats with emissaries from Khrushchev to put a lid on that thing before it got out of hand, despite what the generals... See, he was surrounded by generals as well. Fortunately, he had the better sense not to buy into their militaristic bullshit. I'm not sure that Trump, his stupid war rhetoric notwithstanding, I don't think Trump is a strong enough individual to go up against them. And just the fact that he surrounded himself by them and says a bunch of nice things about them leads me to believe that. But I say all that to say this. If you want a sense of what JFK's mindset actually was, not from the very beginning, but as he grew into the job, read the 2008 book by James Douglas, with two S's, JFK and the Unspeakable.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
It does delve a little bit on the JFK assassination, but not so much the mechanics. It's more about the why. See, it's like a Columbo movie. It's all about the means, motive, and opportunity, but that motive thing will help you get those other two aspects figured out. And the motive, I believe, in this case, the JFK assassination was, he was coming to his senses. He was becoming enlightened, okay? He was approaching the revelation of a different way to go in what he called the new frontier. And it threatened the military. It threatened the industry people, especially the armaments. It threatened the international bankers. So he could not be allowed to get that plan out there, because it would make too goddamn much sense to people in comparison with the mindset that was prevalent at the time, which was the fucking Cold War. So I commend that book to anybody who will take the time to read it. I resisted reading it for a long time, but my older brother sent me a copy, not my younger brother. He sends me Mark Levin books. My older brother's my older brother's a more intelligent fellow. He sent me JFK and the Unspeakable.
Jesus Christ, there's three of you?
Oh, yeah, and one lowly sister who lives up in Maine, who just retired from school.
Tried to get as far away from you other three on the planet and still be in the same country as she could, didn't she?
Well, no, actually, we all kind of split up. I was the first to go rogue by moving to Kansas City in the early 80s. And then my sister, who's younger, moved up to Maine. And then my younger brother, when he retired from Secret Service, he retired to Florida. Duh. Go figure.
Yeah.
And my older brother's the only one who stayed in the D.C. area. So, but he can afford it. I would have too if I could have.
Well, you know, you've got an almost perfect diagonal, San Diego to Maine. So, you know.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Yeah, and Maine to Florida, and Florida out here to San Diego again. But that was basically it. And as far as getting your head around what Trump is up to, it's helpful to always not lose sight of the fact that he doesn't know anything, and he doesn't know that he doesn't know anything, okay? And his modus operandi is bombast, bluster, and bullshit, okay? That's all you really need to know about the guy. And also that his primary objective, his prime directive, if you will, Star Trek reference, is to be right and look good by making everybody else bad and wrong. And he hates to be embarrassed. He hates to be called out. And he'll turn that around as quickly as he possibly can onto whoever's doing the calling out. And you can consult any reputable baby-raising book to find out how we best deal with that behavior, I guess.
That's very much true.
So I've told you everything I know. Now you tell me everything you know.
The one thing you mentioned, JFK, the one thing that kind of pissed me off over the weekend, and I keep forgetting I didn't do a program Friday because I played hooky and we had a lovely day on Bridge Day.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorite days of the year around here. It's just, you know, my little community putting its best foot forward and you know, claustrophobia, 876 feet in the air. You really can't beat that. And
now, is it to commemorate the opening of that bridge?
No, they put it on the third Saturday in October because that's the last weekend of Gauley River rafting season.
Ah, okay.
Because Gauley season is driven by releases of water from Summersville Dam, which fills up, you know, from now until next Gauley season, it'll be filling back up, and then, you know, they let it out, and it's a man-made whitewater rafting adventure. It's a little known fact that the Summersville Dam was originally, well, they built it at a little drowned community called GAD, G-A-D, and it was initially going to be GAD Dam, but then given where it is, West Virginia, fundies, that kind of thing, they realized that, yeah, maybe not.
Now, do the establishments, the commercial establishments nearby, wherever the dam is, do a lot of them advertise best so-and-so by a dam site?
You get a little bit of that. But Bridge Day itself is, imagine a little tiny county seat. I mean, you can look up Fayetteville, West Virginia, with an extra 100,000 people in it.
Oh, wow.
And it was huge. I mean, it this was one of I was told this was one of the biggest ever. You know, there's a chili cook-off and, you know, there's all kind, and everybody shows up to display their stuff on the side of the road and there's all kinds of carnival food and just, you know, it's a 5 mile long street fair.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, you know, it goes into the night and in many ways, I mean, not, you know, because I'm a little ray of sunshine, Scott. what it is, it's the big party at the end of Gauley season. But it's also it's a celebration of the beginning of unemployment season.
Oh yeah, because tourism there is kind of winds up after
because
the
from
festival.
Yeah, because from now until early April, there's going to be a whole lot of people unemployed or vastly underemployed and just scrambling to stay alive.
Yeah, and the holidays are not going to do too much because that's a very limited, what is that, a 6 week the Christmas buying season, and that's pretty much that.
Right, and they don't lay on a whole lot of workers at Wally World anyway. And so, you know, the tourism economy is not a way to run, it's certainly not a replacement for heavy industry or anything like that. Meanwhile, the former Ames tool warehouse up in Parkersburg, you may have noticed, caught fire and turned into a vast conflagration over the weekend because, well, you know, job killing regulations and everything. And I don't know, maybe it was State Farm lightning. You just never know. But no, Marty wants to know, did I bungee jump? How many times do I have to explain this?
I am a 50-something white guy who doesn't jump off perfectly good bridges or out of perfectly good airplanes. I just don't do it. So I didn't, I will not parachute off the bridge, and I will not, I don't even zip line, okay? That's not where I get my kicks. What's that line from One Night in Bangkok? I get my kicks above the waistline, sunshine. You know, I have all my adventures inside, in between my ears.
Oh, good.
And so I'm not one of those people who is so bored with his existence that I want to die by falling off a rock or a bridge or anything like that. Because it does happen, and if it can happen, you know, there's Bob's Law.
Yeah.
It's a corollary to Murphy's Law. You know, my dad used to say that he had his own law. He said, if there is a broke down, no good, jack legged piece of shit out there for sale, I will buy it. And this is a corollary. You know, if you can get a bad parachute that won't open when you jump off the bridge, I'd be the guy who got that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't do it. At this point in time with my gut the way it is, it's a bigger adventure if I eat a goddamn funnel cake. Okay.
it's almost sad, on some level, of what you've been reduced to in terms of excitement and taking risks.
Well, I took a lot of risks when I was younger, and I'd like to think I'm mature. You know, I stopped driving 120 miles an hour on the interstate once I had kids, because, you know, responsibilities.
Yeah. By the way, you mentioned chili. When you get a chance, send me that recipe and find out if there's a way to prepare it if you don't have a crock pot, like a stove.
Oh, no. Yeah, you absolutely. The crock pot's just easy because you dump everything in and go.
Yeah.
If you want to sit there and just stir the pot, yeah, you can just gently simmer. You know, you brown the ground beef and the green peppers and the onions and the garlic and whatever with the chili seasoning on it. You drain it. You put it back in the pot. You pour on the beans, the soup, the cans of soup, the tomato sauce, the Rotel. You stir it, the can of chopped green chilies. You stir it up. You put the lid on, and you put the heat down to low, simmer it on low, and boom, you're done. No crock pot required.
Okay. Because I like chili, and if the weather ever breaks, I mean, if
yeah,
we
not right
get...
now, you don't. Not unless
no,
it's like just,
no.
You know, half frozen gazpacho chili.
or get molds and put wooden sticks in it and have chili sickles.
Chili sickles, absolutely.
There you go.
What's the Mexican Spanish word for it? That would be paletas de chili.
Say it again.
Paletas de chili. Because
okay.
the ice cream bars are paletas and de chili. So yum.
Chili is chili, yeah.
Right.
Well, you woke Punky up.
Well,
he's probably
halfway fainted away in the heat.
No, he does better in the heat than the cold because he can he lifts his little wings up, and he's doing it right now. He kind of puts his wings up to get a little air under his little birdie underarms, as it were. And sometimes he'll fly over here and sit on my shoulder. I turn the fan off, and it is quieter. You're right. But open the doors now that the sun has gone out of the front yard. I mean, this is my first fall here, so I wasn't exactly sure what, you know, as the seasons change, I wasn't sure where the sunshine would pour into the windows, you know, what kind of exposure.
Yeah, you weren't exactly sure how the building was oriented.
But I'm telling you, back when they built this place in 42 or so, 41, insulation was not big on their agenda. And I would get a little window air conditioner, except for the fact that even with the discounted rates for seniors and disabled, I'm sure the utility costs would just kick my ass halfway around the block. So I'll use my old standby. I will climb into the Häagen-Dazs case down at Ralph's until the manager asks me to not do that and threatens to ban me from the store.
Right.
But, Jesus. But anyway, I you're right about Trump in the sense that the guy is just, he will, and I don't know that I would, you know, attach an argument to such a slender thread as Mika Brzezinski. I mean, just because she's right in that one instance.
Well, no, I'm just pointing out the fact that she's catching up to me. At, you know, apparently the latency, the latency time delay between Mika and me is something like 3 to 4 months, maybe five or six.
They need to do what Real Time with Bill Maher is doing. They need to assign more interns to listen to the goddamn show, you know, in greater numbers. So didn't you say that Bill Maher had somehow, there were very close similarities to stuff that was on the show showing up in his, what is that feature that he does at the end of the show?
New Rules,
yeah. God, it's so hot I can hardly think. Jesus.
I'm more than understand, but again, apparently I'm having a hard time communicating it, Scott. What I'm trying to get through is, and I don't think people want to confront it, but when your brain is not fully developed, sometimes you like to do things just to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
In a fully developed brain, that's called scientific curiosity, if, of course, you've been trained in the scientific method. But when the brain's not fully developed, it's called madness. And we have a president who wants to set off a nuclear device, who wants to use a nuclear device against someone just to see what happens. It's the equivalent of sitting out on a sunny driveway with a magnifying glass and stunning ants just to fry them.
Yeah.
Okay? It's plucking wings off flies just to see what happens when they've only got one. And I guess people aren't particularly sympathetic toward flies or ants, but there's a level of cruelty involved, you see. I'm reminded of the stories that were told about young George W. Bush. You remember these? He and his buddy would stick firecrackers up the rectums of frogs and mm-hmm. blow them up just to see what would happen.
Because they're just frogs.
He's just a frog.
Yeah.
It's a manifestation of the same thing. But I don't think W ever got, I mean, I guess there was enough of his old man, his old man's teaching in him, and I'm not going to get all squishy about HW, but, you know, compared to Jesus Christ, it's not much of a comparison, but compared to Trump, you know, HW Bush is fucking Clausewitz, okay? He's not fucking Clausewitz, he's 19th century German, you know, German chancellor. He's a diplomatic.
Von Ribbentrop?
No. That's 20th century. No, this is the guy who invented workers' comp and the.
Oh yeah. I know who you mean.
Yeah, and I don't know why I can't come up with his name. But that's, he's a genius of diplomacy and political, well, he invented that term too, Realpolitik. I think there's still a whole bunch of denial going on in this country, Scott. People don't understand, you know, the 33%, I don't even worry about them because I know they're lost. They're a lost cause. They're past hope, they're dead enders, they're hard cases, and they're never going to help. There is no purpose whatsoever to trying to win over Trumpansy votes in this country. What you've got to do is unify that other 67%.
Yeah.
And we don't want. I think there's a psychic resistance to admitting to ourselves that we are in the grips of a madman. And not even a, you know, there are, you know, we're not talking about a smart madman. We're talking about an evil toddler who just wants to see something go boom because he's never seen it go boom. You know, this is he's the kind of toddler who doesn't stick his own finger in the goddamned outlet. He gets his baby sister and sticks her finger in it.
Yeah.
Okay? That's Trump.
And the screwdriver.
Yeah, that's Trump. And it's...
Well, he seems to appeal to people who are real big on simplistic answers that really aren't answers, but even more importantly, there's nothing simplistic about them when you start to map out what happens as a result of their implementation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Standing up to North Korea is an example of a simplistic answer. And standing up in a nuclear fashion to North Korea is a simplistic answer.
And remember, you know, here's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening, the Kobayashi Maru test, the Kobayashi Maru exercise, the unwinnable situation. And, you know, Kirk was the only one ever to beat it because he cheated and somehow was not thrown out of Starfleet Academy for doing so. But Trump ain't Kirk, and this kind of is a Kobayashi Maru situation, because it's a situation that people talk about trying to put the nuclear genie back in the bottle and the fact that you can't. You know, if we could destroy every single nuclear weapon on Earth, we can't unlearn how to make the goddamn things.
Mm-hmm. And you know that there's going to be somebody who, out of an interest in superiority and leverage and influence, will try as soon as the coast is clear. You just know, because that's the way human beings are wired. But what I was getting at with the people to whom Trump seems to appeal are the people who are really into simplistic so-called solutions. Okay, now what would cause somebody to be that way? Well, if you have a generation or more whose idea of news and information is what is available through Fox and through some of these radio shows and through some of these online so-called news outlets, and now on the horizon is Sinclair Television. Did you see that thing I posted
I did.
Jesus, that will make Fox News look like middle of the road CNN. Maybe not quite, but I mean these people are. See, here's my distinction between Fox News and Sinclair Television. Fox News is the weekend tripper, okay, or the weekend heroin user. Who doesn't mainline, he sniffs, and he only does it either Saturday or Friday, never both, and he skips, does it alternate weekends. Okay, Sinclair is not only, if there's any way to ingest opioids, they will do it, and they'll dream up new ones, and they'll be on the street corner selling it, and they'll even whore out their sister or their mother,
that's true. And simple minds want simple solutions because they cannot comprehend the complex ones. Understand this much, Scott. If the unspeakable becomes reality, and you know, I'm given better than 50-50 odds on it right now. And you know, I'm not pulling out my the tattered purple robe with the frayed appliqued moon and stars and "Will thee kiss me on the on the will thee kiss me in the dark, baby" written in glow in the dark paint on it. And I don't have my my magic eight ball that's cracked on the screen that always says "Answer hazy, ask again later." But that having been said, if the unspeakable becomes reality, those 33% and more will be in the streets celebrating, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And they'll be, "Woo! Woo! Donald Trump's a real man. He's not like that pussy Obama. He showed them. Woo! Drop another one, Donnie. Woo!" Okay?
No, USA, USA. You know?
Yeah. And that is, you know, I'd say up to maybe 50% of America will do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it will, but it will still be, it will remain a civil, our civil heresy to suggest a remedy to a president who uses a nuclear weapon on another country without having one having been used first. Okay? To use a first strike nuclear capability, make a nuclear first strike, even then we won't be able to say, well, you know. No, that will still be illegal. And that's kind of terrifying. Because after he nukes North Korea, they still will not move to take him out of office and get his hands off of the reins of power. They will leave him in place to do it again. And that is where we are, Scott.
I don't see it happening. I mean, yeah, I get that is the scenario that's entirely possible. Should it come to that, I'm just thinking that there's got to be some mechanism that can prevent it.
What?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how it would.
Well, I mean, and I'm not being a prick, I mean, to you, but
who have to launch the goddamn devices or drop them out of the bomb bay doors have got to do it.
I love you, man, but when the admiral stands up and says, "If the president tells me to do it, I will do it," and says it in public.
Yeah, well, that there are those who will, but I would like to think that there are those who won't.
But what I'm afraid of, Scott, and I'm not trying to be contentious here, what I'm afraid of is you're engaging in magical thinking.
Well, I don't know that I am. I mean, let's reason it out. Right now, it's a conversation. It's an intellectual discussion, okay? But to the extent that it becomes real, see, and to go back to the JFK Cuban Missile Crisis thing, there was a time when it was nothing more than just looking and defining the situation and looking at various scenarios as to possible things to do or not do next. But there came a point where the reality of it was like that creature in the movie Alien. It attached to everybody's face. There was no way to miss seeing it and experiencing it. And when you're up against that, you know, something that is that stark and real, then I guess you do have the option not to do anything about it.
Well,
most people are going to react in a way that works.
Yeah, but this is the American military, okay? The entirety of the American military and the entirety of any military is predicated on somebody saying "do this" and somebody below saying "yes, sir" and snapping salute, and somebody below him saying or her saying "yes, sir" and snapping a salute, and it salutes all the way down to the point of somebody pushing a button. Okay.
Yeah.
And so there's that. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we were all sort of titillated by this anonymously reported story of a conversation between McMaster and John Kelly about whether they would tackle him if he tried to go for the nuclear football. Well,
you remember that?
Yeah, that was that's kind of bullshit anyway, because he wouldn't know what to do with the nuclear football, all right? And it's not left to the president to do the nuclear football. He just gives the order. It's not like he has to be, no. Okay? So there's that. And now, with what went down with Frederica Wilson and Maisha Johnson, we know that that was so much bullshit because John Kelly is just another Trumpansy pissant, okay? He's a sleazebag who will do anything to advance the sleazy attacks of Donald Trump. So when I say when I suggest that you're engaging in magical thinking, what I mean by that is that you're looking for a solution in a situation that doesn't have one.
Yeah, but wait. There is a precedent that's not so-called magical thinking. And I forget whether it was General Haig or who it was, but back when Nixon was wandering the hallways at night, half drunk and hopped up on pills, talking to the portraits of the former presidents on the walls, wasn't it Haig or someone high up in the White House who basically said, you know, ixnay on the erective days? In other words, Nix on the presidential directives. If he tells you to do something, you call me first. Wasn't there a statesperson or someone with his head on right in the Nixon administration?
I think you're talking about the Reagan administration, maybe. That in the latter waning days of his madness,
Well, maybe it was Reagan. I for some reason I thought it was Nixon because there was that big hubbub in the fall of 73. Wasn't that the brief war between Egypt and Israel? And there was also a misfire.
Oh yeah, shit got real in a hurry.
Yeah. But there was a thing that indicated that the word had been given for a launch when it actually hadn't. In other words, the wrong code. It seems to me that was in 73.
No, there's maybe that, but there's also the 1980 something near miss that was spotted by a Soviet who recently died. And
yeah,
should have
I
been,
remember that.
Yeah, and he realized it was reflections off clouds and not a U.S. nuclear first strike.
But anyway, my point basically is that it's not totally magical thinking if there are precedents where people have said, no, wait a minute, boys and girls, this is where it's realer than real. And sometimes you need to throw a wrench temporarily into that mechanism. That's what I'm saying, that maybe... Of course, now we're in different times today. Maybe there's not anyone of any stature who has the intelligence.
I'm not counting on John Kelly to do it anymore.
Well, not.
And I'm not counting on H.R. McMaster to do it anymore. I'm sure not counting on Betsy DeVos. Ben Carson, maybe? Rex Tillerson?
What about the woman at the UN, the U.S.
Nimrata Haley? Are you kidding me? She'd lick the soles of his shoes if she thought it would get Rex Tillerson fired and make her Secretary of State.
Well, certainly there is someone or several someones who can whisper into somebody's ear and say, you know, now we've got to do something.
Yeah, it's that certainly part that I take issue with. I think it's anything but certain. I think, in fact, my level of disagreement on this particular point is such that I think it's not only certain, I think it is unlikely. Because it's one thing to have a guy who's on station and realizes it's a reflection off clouds and it's not a nuclear first strike by the United States. It is entirely another thing, Scott. If he gets it into what is left of his spirochete hollowed brain that he wants to see Big Bomb make flash, it's less likely I mean, okay, could that, all right, okay, I'm trying really, and I'm not being an asshole here, I'm trying really hard to work with you on this, okay? Is that the moment that triggers the 25th Amendment?
Well, it maybe needn't go there. It could be, and I hope that the people in dark suits and sunglasses listening don't take this the wrong way, but it could be a scenario as simple as whoever the person is who attends to him as he enters and leaves his bath jostles something with his elbow.
Something occurs with the blow dryer
in the bathtub.
At that point in time, it's a coup. And at that point in time, constitutional governance is over.
Well, then we're all screwed. I guess there is no silver lining here.
I'm even trying to figure out how a 25th Amendment situation works when it has to happen when it has to happen in a matter of minutes. And you've got all these goddamn fawning lick spittle cabinet secretaries wandering around. Scott Pruitt's gonna say you trigger the 25th Amendment. Yeah, what a laugh.
Well, let's step back and let's say this is not the problem. But let's say that this is what we're presented with in terms of an outcome, and it is an outcome of what? Well, I would say it's an outcome of flunking our quadrennial one-question IQ test. And part of the reason for our flunking of it had to do with the machinations of the hackers and the spammers and the scammers.
And the Russians.
In the Soviet Union and the Russians, okay? So basically what we're left with then is no way out because they did their job so effectively that we were left with someone who is so off the fucking twig and surrounded by people are as ineffective as weak water, okay, that we are screwed. Maybe you're absolutely right that there's no way out of this thing.
Well, the only way, you know, it's, we're back to that movie with Matthew Broderick. You know, the only way to win is not to play.
Yeah.
And somebody has got to convince him that he really doesn't want to see Big Bomb go boom, make flash.
So who is the somebody, and is he convincible? Because if the spirochetes have been doing their job as well as it appears, there may not be enough gray matter viable.
Well, all the reporting says that it really is adult daycare, and that it's a matter of managing him. And when he focuses in one direction and he begins to fixate, that you then you redirect him. You say no, over here, and you jingle the keys.
Yeah,
and you take his focus off of it, but again, that is a mighty thin reed on which to hang the lives of millions of human beings, and see, there's one more thing that's sort of subsurface here. We keep talking about our anti-missile system.
Oh yeah.
You remember, that's the same missile system that couldn't hit the target missile unless it had a radio beacon on it for the anti-missile missile to home in on, right?
Yeah, and you got to think the North Koreans are kind of disinclined when it comes to installation of such, you know?
Oh, by the way, follow-up, Kim in New Jersey says it was Nixon Defense Secretary Schlesinger who gave the order to check with him before following a nuclear launch order in those final days of Nixon's presidency. Scott has the story right. Well, okay, so I stand corrected. But if that's the case, there were also similar stories that came out of the end of the Reagan administration.
Yeah. And it seems to be, now that Kim mentions it, it seems to be a lesson that we need to relearn about every 28 or 30 years. Isn't that pretty much where we're at?
Well,
yeah. Why the hell don't these things stick with us? Oh, I know.
Wait, this is where I get to do my terrible Nickel Williamson impression from Excalibur.
For it is the doom of men that they forget.
No, there is that.
James says, subject line 25th, if it happens, it's something you'll wake up to. Then the rage of the 34% begins to build, and you begin hearing news of hostage standoffs and such. Because remember, there within that 33-34%, there are a whole bunch of people with mindsets just like Trump's. They too would like to see, you know, because it doesn't matter to them. North Korea, South Korea, they don't give a shit. They're not white people. So what? Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, I tell you. What are you going to do, China? What are you going to do? We got the greatest military on earth. Have you noticed that? We keep talking about how we got the greatest military on earth, and every time our military goes out, it gets its ass handed to us. Whipped in Vietnam. I mean, the only people that we've really effectively pushed around were the Grenadians and the Panamanians.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, Bush War 1, yeah. Bush War 2, no. No. Afghanistan, no. Losing. That's what we're doing in Afghanistan, losing a lot. And every time we say, you know, we really ought to get out, some asshole stands up and says, yeah, but if we get out right now, that means that everybody that already died in Afghanistan died in vain, so we got to have more people die in vain over there.
And as if that weren't enough, Africa looms, given the death of these four special forces guys a couple of weeks ago in Africa, we haven't heard the last of that. And I'm not just talking Trump's mishandling of the condolence call and Kelly's mishandling of the apology tour, okay? That we were there for some reason. There was some reason.
Oh, here, let me get that out. Let me get that out of the way real quick. We are in Niger for some reason. We have an entire military structure called AFRICOM. We got SOCOM, we got NOCOM, we got ASCOM, we got UCOM, and we got AFRICOM. All right.
Now in Niger, it could be to guard the Yellow Gate. Could that be it?
That's not a could be, that is an is, okay?
Well, there you go.
Niger has some of the most vast proven reserves of uranium on the planet, and it is in a politically and socially and culturally fragile place. So, you know, what we've got there, and I wasn't in the military, I don't profess to have been or anything like that, but I try to read, I try to learn. What we've got there is a group of advisors, okay, and those advisors are what we used to call Green Berets, Special Forces, and they're there to train up the Nigerian military to be able to defend itself. It's a huge fucking country, and it's almost entirely desert, and it's Saharan, okay? Most people have no idea where it is. But the fact of the matter is, they can mine uranium there, and they can mill it down to the yellow cake stage. And we have, I mean, and I'm very skeptical of national security, so-called national security interests, but if there ever was one, it would seem like we have one in trying to keep people from getting hold of uranium who would like to use it both immediately and violently.
Yeah. Yeah, and who are not necessarily interested in ICBM use of it, delivery of it, that they'll take it any fucking way.
Yeah, they'll put it on a truck.
Yeah.
Or so-called suitcase nukes or whatever. I remain anti-war, but I understand a desire. You know, we're there. The French are there. The UN is in that general region. There's been a bunch of international troops killed there. There are various bands of malcontents and discontents that can be networked with. You know, the yellow cake from Niger story was bullshit in 2003 when it was being promulgated as casus belli for Iraq. Yeah. But they really do have tremendous reserves of uranium. What used to be called pitch blend, uranite, uranium ore. And the process of milling it down to yellow cake is something that they can do inside Niger, and it's about the only goddamned export they have.
Yeah, and you can be sure that these religious fanatics who know that an ICBM is too big a delivery system for them to accomplish, and suitcase technology is a little bit too wieldy, these people would take, they present a new twist on the bomb belts and the strap-on vests that they use to deliver conventional plastic explosives. They will probably work out some way to miniaturize a nuclear device and carry it in the form of a fucking inserted suppository before it's over.
Oh, Jesus.
That's triggered by a goddamn cell phone. There's probably an app for that they will work out.
Oh, Jesus, what a thing. Now, let's remember, yellow cake is not particularly radioactive, okay? I mean, it's radioactive, but it's not like walking around with plutonium or something like that.
Yeah, it's got to be refined.
Yeah, it's got to be worked down to the, you know, down to the pure stuff, 238 and 235. But that's why we're there.
Yeah.
Because there are, and that's why the Chinese are in African countries. Because there is a vast amount of still untapped rare earth and extremely valuable elemental minerals to be had there.
And as the Bible clearly states, the meek shall inherit the earth, but not the mineral rights.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. So, and you know, the larger question, I do find it interesting that after the hissy that was had over Benghazi, we're not so good. The Republicans aren't so good at having a Niger hissy. I think maybe it's because they're afraid of the word. But no, they're not. And the fact of the matter is, Sergeant Johnson, they had to go back and find him. You know that, you know all that military horse shit about we leave no comrade behind. Well, they left him behind, and they had to go back and find his remains after a day or so in the desert. There are, you know, and so, you know, that's probably why. His mama was told, no, you cannot have an open casket funeral. And his wife was told, no, you can't see him. Because there ain't much in the box.
Well, this raises a question, what you've been talking about. How long was it before Trump even engaged on the question of what had happened to the four soldiers?
Oh, goddamn, weeks.
Two weeks,
yeah.
Is it possible that he's so out of touch that he's not even aware that we have military over there, much less that they're in harm's way?
Well, in light of the fact that you've got extremely powerful members of Congress who are willing to walk in front of cameras and say, well, goddamn, I didn't even know we was in the country of Africa. Okay?
Yeah,
I think that's entirely likely. You know, again, going back to the reign of error, do you remember the Brazilian joke?
No, go ahead. I do.
Dick Cheney walks. Dick Cheney walks into the Oval Office, and the, you know, Bush has started the Iraq War, and he's just collapsed in a heap, weeping and sobbing at his desk, and Dick looks at him and says, "Come on there, little president. What's the matter? How can old Dick help you?" And W looks up and goes, "My God, Dick, they killed a Brazilian in Iraq last night." He goes, "Well, I understand, little guy, but you got to pull yourself together." And with a look of shock and dismay on his face, W looks up at Dick and says, "Do you even have any idea how many there is in a Brazilian?" Tough fucking crowd. Well, it's an old joke anyway, there's an element of that. No, he doesn't. He hasn't even said Niger yet, because his entire staff knows he'll fuck it up.
Well, yeah, it makes me think
because he knows Bruce. How to say the other word. We have credible reporting on that fact. He said it every other goddamn day on the set at The Apprentice.
It's the Lenny Bruce routine about coaching LBJ on how to say Negro. You know, because that didn't come too naturally to him, being best buddies with who was the Georgia senator?
Oh, Lester Maddox.
Richard Russell, his mentor in. You know,
but yeah, we named a building after him.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that interesting?
And it's the prettiest one too. Anyway, I'm running out of time here. It's been a lovely conversation, but I think there are a couple other folks that want to get in on it, and I want to create a little space for them. But I think we've opened some doors and we've pondered some thoughts, and you know, bless your little heart for the optimist that you are. I want you ultimately, Scott, I want you to win this argument.
Me too, but I sometimes wonder if as I noted a few months ago, we're all screwed.
It feels a little more and more like that. Like I said, I picked a hell of a time to quit drinking.
There you go. All right, Bob, take care.
Later, Scott. Bye now.
See ya.
Our buddy Scott and Punky sweltering in San Diego. Lines open if you want to jump in. I think we're going to have what may be a newish caller. I'm not sure. We'll find out. Because on the Skype line, we have Hung Like Jesus. Let me just note on the way, we got $72 to go in fundraising before Ralph's challenge kicks in. 72 more bucks, and Ralph's finishes it all up with a nice, tidy 50, and we've met the fundraising goal for the last night before our 12th anniversary here on the Horn. So thank you very kindly to everybody who's jumped in. Thank you, Keith, for jumping in as well and taking us down to $72. We'll cross our fingers here in the last 18 minutes. It ain't every day you get a call from Hung Like Jesus. What's happening? Yo, I got you're there. You're on the air. Oh, Jesus.
Hello?
There you are. Okay.
I'm sorry. I was on mute. Yeah, I've been listening for a little while now. I heard you on Angry Indian, and I decided to come over myself. But anyway, I was in
welcome
the Air Force.
Welcome to the party.
Thank you. I was in the Air Force for 8 years back in the mid-80s to the mid-90s. And I was a 463, which is a nuclear weapons specialist, stationed out in Albuquerque. And it was a depot. It was where we stored all the bombs that were they came for maintenance, and they went back out to wherever they were going around the world. But at the end of that, we were going overseas and bringing all of them back because they were closing down a lot of bases. So a lot of the weapons had to come back. And we did TDY every couple of weeks to go get weapons and bring them back to the depot, back to Albuquerque, Kirkland Air Force Base. But
hey, one thing, whatever the music going on in the background, could you kind of kill that?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No worries. Sounded really peaceful.
It was a game. The thing I just wanted to let everyone know, the insanity of nuclear weapons. Now, we had a couple of them there, the biggest bombs we had, and I'm not sure the number, so I won't even go into what they were called. But they were the biggest two. We had three of them there. It was the biggest ones we had in our arsenal, bombs. And I'm 6'2", and we did maintenance on these things. However, you know, whenever the rotation came, we'd have to do maintenance, like change parachutes or whatever. And I could walk into the back of this bomb, and all I had to do is just hold my head down just a little bit, and I could walk into the back of it. Those are the two biggest ones we had. Now, we were told by, I think we were in Denver, we were told we were going through classes and everything, and we were told that we had three of them in our arsenal, but it said if two of them went off at the same time in the same spot on the planet, it would knock the Earth off of its axis. Now, this is the insanity of nuclear weapons.
Jesus.
Yes, and it was just two of them. We have three of these, and it was just two of them. And you want to talk about Moab? Moab has nothing on this. This is just insanity.
No. Moab's a Moab, but the Moab was just
and it's conventional.
It was to try to placate his desire to see something big blow up for a little while longer.
Yes, that was insanity as well. But the thing that I think is more crazy than the arsenal that we have, and you know, these things are not on, they're not in Albuquerque anymore. I'm not sure where they are. They spread throughout wherever they spread them out. But the thing that's even to me more crazy than having bombs that can do this is the fact that we have mutually assured destruction. So when we launch, they launch. And to ensure that no one wins, we just kill everything.
Yeah, that was the operative theory back when you had a couple of responsible nuclear powers like the United States and the Soviet Union. Right. Mutually assured destruction is no longer a going concern, as far as I can tell.
Well, whatever's in place of it, I mean, and who wants to live through that anyway? And to me, it's just And understand the two bombs that I told you about, the three bombs that I told you, the biggest one we had, that's just a fraction of the arsenal that we had sitting there. And I mean, it was just, and we had people who were in my squadron after seeing what we actually had to do, after coming from tech school and, you know, going through all that, and seeing what we actually had as far as an arsenal, as far as nuclear weapons went, they became conscientious objectors and just could not do it. I mean, you know, because they called us mushroom farmers because, you know, bombs make mushrooms when they go off and into the bombs. So we were called mushroom farmers. And they thought that was cute. We had mugs and T-shirts and everything with the stuff on it. And, you know, doing this for as long as I did it, and you know, I'm thinking, you know, what am I a part of? What am I a part of? Am I going to be a part of this, you know, us not having a home anymore? And by home, I mean this planet. And these things were ready to go.
Yeah, but
whenever.
See, that's the thing, though. It's actually a bad thing that mutually assured destruction is kind of is passé now, because what we're talking about is little states that develop nuclear weapons to keep the big states off of them.
Right.
Because it's the only way they have. You know, if you try to push us around, we'll set off a nuclear device. And that's a totally different calculus and a totally different philosophical approach. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, I don't know how I don't know if North Korea has succeeded in miniaturizing a weapon sufficiently to get it into a warhead on top of one of their missiles, and I don't know how well their missiles work. But the underlying assumption that they are just sitting there champing at the bit, eager to nuke us, I mean, isn't that the elephant that's terrified of the mouse?
Yep, exactly is.
And it also requires an assumption on our part that the leadership in North Korea is so crazy that they would not recognize what would happen to them if they launched a first strike. You know, this is an argument I made about Iran for years and years and years. Why in God's name, if they had two or three nuclear weapons, would they use one when they knew that Israel would put 200 on them in a second?
Supposedly. Israel, supposedly.
Yeah, right. With the asterisk. Sure.
Right, right. See, the thing that I'm concerned about, you know, because if we do a first strike in if they do a first strike in North Korea, it's going to drag China in. China's not going to stand for that.
No.
And, you know, what is China going to do? China, what are they going to do? They're not going to sit there. No, they have to retaliate.
Well, strategically, what I keep saying is that if you know the history of the region and you know the ancient animosities and the ancient grudges, if Kim Jong bad haircut really wants to nuke somebody, he doesn't even want to nuke the Korean. He doesn't want to nuke South Korea. He wants to rule South Korea. He wants to nuke Japan.
Right.
Because the hatred the Koreans have for the Japanese is ancient and deep and broad.
Right. Right.
And that's why, you know, that's why these missile tests have been passing over, you know, Hokkaido, the northernmost island, and landing in the Sea of Japan and things like that. That's who he's aiming at. Now, we have a duty to protect Japan if that happens.
Right. It wouldn't be a first strike if he did that.
Well, if he first...
would cross China. Not for us, it wouldn't be.
Right. And you know, there's another thing from a policy standpoint to take in. Everybody says, well, you know, China will rein him in. I was reading over the weekend, apparently, Kim has never been to China. Ever. At all.
Right. I think I read that as well.
And as a consequence, China's ability to control North Korea is, at least according to some I read, wildly overstated. And so, you know, so telling President Xi, you know, you need to do something about that little bastard.
Right.
Okay, what? is his response. Yeah, we know, and so, you know, we've gotten ourselves into a little, and with all the bellicose language, and I will unleash fire and fury, fire and fury. Yeah. He's gotten himself into a position where if he doesn't, he's shown up to be the little braggadocious pissant that he is, and that's the one thing his ego cannot stand.
No, I think you know. I guess I'm hopeful that we live in some sort of a world that would balance itself out. I honestly think, I don't think that North Korea has a weapon that could reach. I don't even think they have a nuclear weapon that could even detonate. But I think it's something is whatever the checks and balances is around Trump. I'm thinking something will kick in when. We'll just let him run his mouth as far, you know, get on Twitter and do whatever you want to do. Talk to Fox News. Just make a fool out of yourself. But as far as anything else goes, no, you don't hold control. We have the reins of this thing. I have to honestly, and I guess I'm just being hopeful.
Well, and that's what it is. I mean, that's what Scott and I were going back and forth about. That's what I call magical thinking. And I'm one of these people who really wants concrete, you know, tactile proof.
And but wouldn't Kelly's little stunt the other day be somewhat proof of that? Kelly's throwing his sword for what? A clown? I think they want him to just let you know. Yes, we're all behind you.
But what?
You.
If, wait. But wait though. What if we're mischaracterizing that? What if he didn't fall on his sword? What if? And the best explanation of this that I've run across came from Lawrence O'Donnell because he comes from the same neighborhood in Boston.
Right.
What if John F. Kelly is a goddamn racist? What if he's always been a racist?
Well, he's from Boston. Come on.
You know, and with that in mind, what if he didn't fall on his sword? What if he did that happily? You know, we know a little bit about the things that he did at Homeland Security, and they were racist, nasty-ass things. Okay?
Yes. And why that's never come out, I don't know. I don't know why that's not just news. I don't know why... MSNBC, CNN's jumping on that and giving some background to this dude.
I mean, John Kelly is a hero. Well, you know, I posted a little essay about that on Facebook over the weekend. I don't know where that comes from either, because I can't see that he's ever done anything heroic.
Yeah.
If you were military, you probably got a pretty good idea what you got to do to get a bunch of stars on your shoulder boards. You have to do in the American military as it presently exists, you have to kiss a lot of ass, and you've got to have an absolutely pitch-perfect public relations machine.
Oh, God, yes.
What you don't have to be is Clausewitz.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to have the operational talents of an Alexander or you know, any of the great generals through history.
Right.
It's because it's institutionalized and it's stylized and it's ritualized and it's formalized. And so, I mean, you know, everybody shit themselves over Stormin' Norman Schwarzkopf. Boy, I tell you what, he talks tough. And apparently that's all you've got to do is talk tough.
That's right.
But, you know, as far as I can tell, based on the reading I've done,
The only thing that separates Flynn from Kelly is that Flynn was stupid and sleazier.
But he's stupid, definitely.
But they're both right wing POSs.
Right. You know, you shatter my hope, but you know, I just want to keep that hope up that, you know, it's someone there that's gonna, you know, keep this dude, just give him his telephone, give him some chocolate cake and two scoops, and let him go ahead and Twitter whatever he want, and we'll get on, we'll send that other psycho out there, the press secretary, and she'll just say whatever the hell it is that he wants her to say. How do these people even live with themselves? How do they eat? How do they look in the mirror?
Yeah, you got me, man. You got me. But again, remember, you know, Shakespeare said what's past is prologue. When we're talking about her, we're talking about Mike Huckabee's daughter.
Right.
Okay.
But
we're talking about the sister of a guy who lynched a stray dog and beat it to death and burned it at Boy Scout camp or church camp or something. And the Arkansas State Police had to come in and insulate him from prosecution for animal cruelty. That, you know, we're talking about evangelical fundies. And they're just nasty. So they don't live with themselves. They just say, well, Jesus will forgive me if I was wrong, but I'm pretty sure Jesus agrees with me, so let me go out and tell another fucking lie.
Right. And which makes them no different from any kind of Islamic crazy.
Well, you said you found the program through Angry. Thanks, Angry. Mm-hmm. You may not have been around long enough to hear, you know, one of my central truths is that it ain't the particular religion that's the problem. I'm no fan of religion. Right. It's the fundamentalism.
Oh, well, you know, the labels. Well, you know, yeah.
Fundamentalism. A fundamentalist Muslim, a fundamentalist Hindu, a fundamentalist Jew, a fundamentalist Jain, a fundamentalist Christian, a fundamentalist what the hell ever is damn
Buddhist.
Dangerous.
Buddhist.
Yeah, a fundamentalist Buddhist is dangerous, not because of the particular brand of religion they are, but because of the fundamentalism.
Right.
And if you go back to, say, T.E. Lawrence's Seven Pillars of Wisdom, he tells us back in the early 20th century about the coming rise of Wahhabism. He writes about Wahhabism. Right. And he tells us who they are. And they all share everything in common. You know, if you sat down the pastor of the First Baptist Church of Dallas, Robert Jeffress, across from the Ayatollah of Iran, across from the Grand Mufti of Saudi Arabia, well, the Iranian guy and the Saudi Arabian guy would try to kill each other. But if you broke them up and they sat down and they started talking about the things they agree on and disagree on, they'd find that they have more things they agree on. They all oppress women. They all want to control other people's lives. They oppose, you know, gambling, dancing, drinking, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. They want to interfere in people's quiet enjoyment of their own existence. And you know, thank God there's enough doctrinal difference to keep them from ever doing that. Because if they all ever got around to agreeing, the normal people on this planet would be screwed to the ground.
Yes, just like the fundies here, right?
Yeah. Well, it's been a great conversation. I hope we will have more of the same in the near future. Feel free to jump in anytime. You're welcome in the chat room. It's good to see you in there. Good to see you, hear from you over here on Skype. I look forward to it.
Okay, I'll call back.
Good deal. Take care now.
No, you too. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye. Informative details courtesy of Hung Like Jesus. Always great to get a first-time call. Love those. See how easy it is? So we're out of here. We're out of here with $72 remaining on Ralph's challenge. Hopefully that will hopefully we'll get to that before airtime tomorrow, our 12th anniversary. Yay! And go from there. Thanks to everybody who jumped in on the fundraising. Thanks to everybody for hanging out and participating in this little conversation in whatever fashion you so do.
Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thanks, John Fox. Thanks, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.